Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, intern Robert here with you on this Friday morning, talking a little college football. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend David Ubben from The Athletic. David, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time to be with us. We really appreciate it. So there's a lot to get to with you today. Let's start with the Vols. They go into Oklahoma. They get the win. They're 4-0 as they enter into their first bye week here. What have you made of what you've seen from Tennessee, and do you consider the Vols a legitimate national title contender?
Contender, sure. I mean, they're going to be in the mix. I was pretty high on Tennessee coming into the year. I liked a lot of their personnel. I liked kind of the murmurs you kind of heard out of camp, and they've probably exceeded even my expectations. I thought it was kind of silly that they were kind of a borderline top 15, 20 team coming into the year. I was like, this is probably one of the 10 best teams. They might be one of the 4 or 5 best teams. They'd be, you know, one of the 2, 3 best teams. So I think we're going to learn more when they go up against Alabama and Georgia. That's kind of been the test for them and this offense is, hey, you know, when you go mano-a-mano with teams that can match you athlete for athlete, can you still be a productive offense and beat those teams? I think their defense is obviously much improved from the 2022 unit. I suspect they will not give up 60 points to South Carolina at any point this year. And so when you have a defensive line like the one that they have and a secondary that even though it's a little inexperienced, has played really well, you know, that's a defense is going to keep you in a lot of games. I don't know. Oklahoma is probably a bad example, but if you score 25 points in that 2022 unit, you know, I don't know how many games you win on the road against top 15 teams in the SEC.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously that D line is absolutely legit. Defensive front linebacker is really good. So when you look at the landscape right now, David, and I know last time we saw Georgia, they had one of those ugly struggling games at Kentucky, but I don't see, you know, a team that's clearly better than others. Like there's like, you know, some years we have this team that's clearly the best, or maybe there's two. Who among these teams are in that group at the top would you say is most likely to grow into that? If there is a team that's going to grow into a wagon, so to speak, that's the clear favorite.
Probably Georgia or Texas and probably Ohio State. I think those are the three that, you know, just personnel-wise and the way that they play on the lines. And then obviously with Ohio State, I mean, the backs, the receivers. Basically Ohio State's entire roster. But Texas on the lines, and they got to get a little healthy. So I think those three kind of jump out to me as teams that, you know, you could see them developing into teams that late November, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're watching them going, I don't know. Bama's kind of a wild card. There's so many variables with that team, a first-year coach. We'll learn a lot about them this weekend. I do think they win. I think this is a tough matchup for Georgia, but I think Georgia's got a higher ceiling.
So, David, the Matthew Slucka situation, we discussed some of your reporting yesterday on the show here with the NIL and the dad coming out and saying, you know, attaching his name to it and calling out members at UNLV there. What do you make of this whole thing, and where do you think this thing here goes from here, specifically with Slucka?
I feel bad for the kid, honestly. I mean, it's a tough situation to be in. You want to play. You want to maximize your value. I mean, this is a guy that probably does not have an NFL future. And so if you got 1 year where you're going to be able to cash in and set yourself up, you know, coming out of college, if I could make, you know, 6 figures my senior year of college and then all of a sudden I just wasn't being paid, that's kind of tough. That can really set you up to have some success moving forward. And so he's in an unenviable spot where, yeah, you're kind of wanting to get that done, but you don't want to quit on your teammates and all that stuff. So you're in a really tough spot. So this is a system that is ripe for producing situations like these because there are no kind of guidelines and the norms are tough and these collectives are all over the place in how they're funded and how they operate. And then coaches and their relationships with the collectives, it seems like there might have been a breakdown there. So it's a tough situation for everybody. And I think until college football gets to a place where there's more common sense, I always say something resembling employment, something resembling revenue sharing, something resembling a players association, you're going to see probably more situations like these.
So meanwhile, Judge Claudia Wilkins, so you know, she asked for sort of a revision because some of the language in this case, David, is to the effect of still trying to cap NIL money, which again to me is just mind-boggling that we're still talking about that. But so there's no judgment yesterday. There's some back and forth. How do you view that and where it's going from here?
Well, I think we'll have a cap at some point because you have to have something. You know, I don't think you want to get to a baseball situation where, you know, Ohio State's got, you know, kind of where right now, where Ohio State's got a bunch of money and other schools have less money. I think there will get to something resembling a cap, but you have to have a player association or a union or something like that that can negotiate, hey, here are the rules of engagement. You know, right now it is kind of a free for all and trying to figure all these things out is difficult. So, you know, when revenue sharing eventually gets here, that will kind of, I think, give you a sense of like, okay, let's start with this budget here. You know, if you can have money over the top there, maybe that's something you can have. I don't know. I think it's going to be a weird spot for a long time, even after some of that stuff comes in, because, you know, just getting to a place where you have a collectively bargained set of rules where the players are in the room, have representatives and agree to some of these rules is going to be a bit of a hurdle. Association, and instead of, I would tell people, you know, it's a math problem above all else. Instead of 32 rosters of 53 guys, you're going to have 134 rosters of looking like 105 scholarships. That's a lot more guys. So, and trying to get to a place that is a little bit more sensible.
David Oven from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, David, we were having this discussion on the show. Travis Hunter, I think you can make a pretty good case, is the best player in college football. What happens in terms of the Heisman Trophy discussion in your mind if Colorado ends up 7-5 or 8-4, but they're not really a factor in the college football playoff? How does that influence the Travis Hunter discussion? Should that influence the Travis Hunter Heisman Trophy discussion?
I mean, I don't think it should. I don't think he has a super acute. I mean, if you look at all the games that they've lost, maybe Stanford last year was the only one that, like, you could point to his play and say, well, that's kind of a reason, like, they didn't win that ball game. I mean, they literally won last week because of a play that he made. I mean, five consecutive games with 100 yards. The thing with Travis Hunter, the two-way stuff will probably help him I don't think it's fair to call it a novelty. It will help him despite the win-loss. I think there's I just don't have a lot of respect for a lot of Heisman voters who don't take this seriously and don't watch enough. But, you know, I think for me, the biggest thing, the biggest difference from him this year to last year, outside of the health stuff, is his coverage numbers were not good last year. He was beaten a lot. He was not good in coverage if you looked at his numbers and looked at when he was targeted. He is an actual lockdown corner this year on top of being – you know, I think he's, what, top five, top six in the country in receiving yards. He's got, again, I said, you know, 100 yards for five straight games. That's a school record for him. So I think that, you know, playing on a team that people do watch a lot and being a two-way guy, I think will help him with some of the Heisman voters who, you know, have to be held against their will to vote for anybody other than the best quarterback on the best team, which is a frustrating dynamic, you know, all over again. I think when you have people making the case that Stetson Bennett is the best player in college football, I'm just like, guys, what are we doing? So I hope that those things aren't held against him. I hope people watch the games. I mean, he's definitely in the mix. There's a lot of football left. At this point, he'd probably get my vote because he's just been unbelievable. And I think for me, the maturation from a high football IQ playmaker defensively to an actual lockdown corner, in addition to still being improved as an offensive player, is pretty astounding, man. We just have not seen this. We have not seen this at all. I think my podcast producer noted this, but the year that Charles Woodson won the Heisman and people pointed to him as a two-way player, I think he had like 111 yards receiving that year.
Yeah, Yeah. He was a returner.
Novelty.
Yeah.
That's novelty. Travis Hunter is one of the best receivers in college football and one of the best corners. And if you wanted to make the case, he's the best at both. I mean, he was not one of the best corners in college football last year. He just wasn't. He made some plays. This year, he's in that mix. It's unbelievable to watch.
Well, I totally agree with you. Now, of course, Woodson was on the number one undefeated team, right? So, and he was incredibly dominant as a corner. He erased half the field. But you're right. I mean, he wasn't a true two-way player. With Hunter, not only do you have all these, I mean, like the fact that you have a physical tackle that forces a fumble to clinch a game is now part of his season too, right? Like that yeah. play is a game-winning play. So I'm with you. I'm sure you and I have talked about this, but like I still get angry when I think about 2009 because Ndamukong Suh was clearly the best player in college football. And that's how I voted, but, you know, I don't even remember where he ended up, but he wasn't close to winning, and he should have won.
I think Toby Gerhart got more votes than Sue that year. I mean, it is what it is. Like, I didn't have a vote at the time. I was a bit of a young buck. But man,
that's right. I'm old AF. I forgot.
Yeah, you are old, Joe. I'm sorry to tell you this. I don't know if you you've been informed, but yeah, that's the most frustrating Heisman situation. I think that one and Stetson getting to New York. Listen, I like Stetson Bennett as much as the next guy, but like I think it really just is frustrating that like guys watch the games. Like to me, when it comes out of the Heisman, I kind of pointed to a couple things. One, how acute was your impact on your team's win-loss record? Two, how much did you just make me say, wow? And how did you perform in the biggest games? I mean, those are kind of the three things that I really factor in to the voting. It's an inexact science, but I take it pretty seriously. And I think a lot of people just I don't know some of these voters, man. Some of these voters, people that turn in their ballots before championship weekend. So these people that like watch a guy throw for 300 yards in the SEC championship, and they're like, well, we got to vote for that guy now. It's like, no, you don't. Like, watch the games, guys. This is why I think the Heisman should go from like 900 voters to like 100. But, you know, nobody asks me.
David, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. Enjoy this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
That's right. David Ubben from The Athletic, our guest. We got kind of like a mini Ubben rant there to set up the
record. I like it. Man, I absolutely. That's a great rant, and I am here for it all the way, man. Voting for awards in general, like, can be frustrating, but especially, like, yeah, again, like you said, 900 Heisman voters, man, and a couple hundred at least are just completely just gristle on the stake. Just cut them off.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.